You're listening to BreadboxMedia.com. The program is Setting the Record Straight, and I'm your host, Chuck Coughlin. Considering and reflecting today on marijuana, should marijuana be legal? Somebody said to me the other day, Chuck, I heard that you said that the whole approach of having medical marijuana made legal is a hoax. Did you say that? I said, yeah, it is a hoax. The whole problem with legalization is people haven't looked at the results of studies, 30 years of studies of the effects, physiological and psychological, of marijuana smoking or imbibing marijuana. And what about the hemp thing? How did that get tied to the marijuana issue? Well, it's the same genus and species, Cannabis sativa. Doesn't it seem like the same people that are pushing for legalizing marijuana are pushing for the cultivation of industrial hemp, overturning laws that we've had in effect for years against growing industrial hemp? C.S. Lewis said, if someone sees a fence that's blocking the way, who can tear it down? He said, before you tear it down, go find the man that put it up or knew why it was put up and talk to him first before you take it down. Why was hemp illegal in the first place? You always get the same answer. Well, it was corrupt politicians. That may be the real explanation, or it may not be. It also sounds like the explanation people give for a lot of things that just doesn't explain it. Why was it illegal? In all these states, it was illegal. Why? The subject today is marijuana. So let's start out with a news item. Here's something very recent, April 27th, 2015. Huffington Post. Headline, even Fox News shows majority of Americans now support marijuana legislation. I guess that implies that Fox News would be reluctant to report that. I've never noticed him being reluctant to report things. But here's what the article says. A majority of Americans support legalizing recreational marijuana, a Fox News poll revealed Monday. Yes, that Fox News. The Fox poll marks the first time the news organization has found majority support for the issue since it began asking the question. It's also the latest in a string of recent polls that have, for the first time in their histories, found majority support for legislation. Do you think we'll let them have it? People want this marijuana. Do you think we should let them have it? I go on with the article. When asked if they favor or oppose legalizing marijuana, 51% of registered American voters surveyed nationwide said they favor legalization. And they have a graph that's entitled Marijuana Legalization Just Keeps Gaining Support. Well, they must be right. All these people want to have legal marijuana. They must be right, right? Okay. They know what they're doing. No, they don't. We'll talk about that in this program. They're making a big mistake. We live in an age that is the new dark age, an age of increasing superstition. That's one of the themes of my shows. That's why setting the record straight is essential. We go on with the article. It's a very small uptick from a similar question Fox News asked last year, which found 50% support. But it is a significant jump from the only 26% supporting the poll found in 2001. And it illustrates the dramatic shift in public opinion that the issue has seen over the years. CBS News found 53% in support of marijuana legislation, a first since CBS began asking the question in 1979. In March, General Social Survey, widely regarded as the most authoritative source when it comes to researching public opinion, found a majority, 52%, in favor of legalization. This is the first time they've had that result. Gallup, 58%, in favor of marijuana legalization. But when the poll was taken a year later, that figure dropped back to 51%. Oh, maybe they're reading some articles about it. Maybe they're investigating some of the pathological effects, some of the permanent pathological effects of using marijuana. It's easy to do. It's all on the internet. His strongest supporters are the young left-leaning male voters. Majorities of voters under age 35 and between the ages of 35 and 54 are in favor of legalization. Maybe you remember being in that age group too. I do. I also had the fantasy then that I was immortal. I'm well. Back to the survey. While a majority of voters in the older demographics are increasingly opposed, so they're moving in the opposite direction. The Fox News poll consisted of landline and cell phone interviews of 1,012 registered voters around the nation. Well, don't you think this is very important information? And if you have information that's not being included in the discussion, perhaps this is the time to speak up now. Okay, no need to wait. Let's dive into the deep end here. Here's some information about marijuana presented in a summary form, which I compiled and made a brochure, which I compiled and had a brochure printed, which I distributed at a local county fair. Here's the basic information. Marijuana's harmful side effects, as indicated in studies published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. On the last page of the brochure, I gave the citations. The journals are from the Proceeding of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America, from Contemporary Pediatrics, from the American Journal of Epidemiology, from the American Cancer Society, from publications of the U.S. Department of Drug Enforcement, and the U.S. Department of Justice. So I've summarized all this. I can attribute it to the specific sources if you want, but why do that here? Harmful effects, number one. Number one, fellas, listen up. Linked to testicular cancer. Oh. Linked to development of breasts in males. Oh. Linked to reduced sperm counts. Oh. Linked to loss of recent memory. Well, boy, are we experiencing a national epidemic of loss of recent memory. I wonder if this is the reason. Linked to distorted perception. Linked to reduced problem-solving ability. I think for setting the record straight, I need to retitle that last item. Let's call it linked to increased incidence of causing problems. There's more. Linked to coordination loss. Linked to greater respiratory problems than caused by cigarette use. Linked to lung cancer. Linked to accelerated aging of memory. Maybe this is why I'm remembering things my friends know. Linked to long-term negative effects on the brain. Linked to an increased incidence of schizophrenia. And linked to reduced fetal growth. Why would a pregnant mother smoke marijuana? I do know that from one source said that a nursing mother who smokes marijuana will deliver THC, the intoxicating substance, into her milk at a concentration of 20 times what it was in her own body. Let's talk about teenagers. The use of marijuana in teenagers is linked to an 8-point permanent loss in IQ. This was reported by a New Zealand study of a group of teenage users as they aged from 13 to 38. Very long study, from 13 to 38. In the study group, IQ continued to decline even after the cessation of the marijuana use. Let me read that again. In the study group, IQ continued to decline even after the cessation of marijuana use. Are you still not convinced? There's more. A loss from a normal IQ of 100 to 92 is a significant loss in ability to think, as anyone who's ever taught school knows. Some statistics. Marijuana causes 30% of DUIs, driving under influence. Marijuana used by a perpetrator is present in 20% of homicides. 22% of the U.S. population use illegal drugs. That includes 13.7% of eighth graders. Marijuana is the leading substance causing accidental death of teenagers. Marijuana is the leading substance causing accidental death of teenagers. Is there a nagging thought in your back of the mind that this legalization is for adults only? Oh, we're going to have something like a drinking age. That works real well in keeping young people away from drinking, doesn't it? No, not always. And certainly the widespread acceptance among the slightly adult population is definitely going to lead to older boyfriends giving younger girlfriends access to marijuana. There is already in place in existence a major underground industry selling marijuana at this time to people of all ages. Do you think they're going to go away or just retarget their marketing? They're going to retarget it to now a uniformly gullible group. They're going to target that new audience, a more gullible audience than they ever had before. Marijuana is the leading substance causing emergency room visits of teenagers. As medical marijuana sales expanded into 20 states, legal marijuana was detected in the bodies of dead drivers 3 times more often in 2010 when compared to those who died behind the wheel in 1999, 11 years before. According to a new study from Columbia University, published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Would you be interested in a few more highlights? I've got them. I'll bring them up right after the break. One of the most common reactions I get when I speak of the pathological effects of marijuana use is this defense. Well, alcohol is legal, and look at all the pathological effects of alcohol. And they present this as an argument for legalizing marijuana. But I turn it back and say, you know, that sounds like a great argument against what you just said. Isn't that a great argument against legalizing another problematical substance with severe pathological effects? This is setting the record straight about the reasons not to legalize marijuana. Chuck Coughlin, back after the break. And you know it, you're listening to BreadboxMedia.com.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at BreadboxMedia.com.
You're listening to BreadboxMedia.com. The program is Setting the Record Straight, and I'm your host, Chuck Coughlin. We're reflecting today on the great rush to legalize marijuana, and it's a heedless rush, and a rush based, once again, in one of my bold propositions, it's based in this era, which is a dark age of greater superstition. People don't know the truth, and in this case, they're self-indulgent and therefore don't want to know the truth. They don't want to hear it, and they will quickly forget it or perhaps cite other information that they consider authoritative. So we might get a Tower of Babel on this subject. But if that's so, perhaps we should slow down and exercise caution and thoroughly examine the issue. Wouldn't that be wise? Because we certainly are rushing into legalizing marijuana state by state without due consideration. And the public is supporting that, as I showed in the former segment of the program. By doing so without proper examination, they've demonstrated, by that rush to judgment, a certain immature self-indulgence, a certain lack of good judgment that indicates that legalizing a dangerous substance for a population who lacks good judgment to use the substance with discretion, that we shouldn't release it to them at all. What we have is a segment of our population, indeed a majority, that has already demonstrated itself to have lacked the discretion and mature self-control to avoid a substance that is so pathological, so harmful, that they should avoid it based on their own discretion and own good judgment. Are they choosing not to avoid it? In a better world, this would disqualify such people from making this decision for the rest of us. And as I said just before the break, their first thing out of their mouths is, well, alcohol is worse. As if that argument would support the introduction of legal marijuana when it's an argument against it. If one intoxicating substance produces pathological results, why add another one with another set of pathological effects to the mix? And then another, and then another. Are we on a slippery slope? If that's the argument defeats itself. You're just making a bad problem worse. It's an argument against legalizing marijuana. Let's get back to a rational approach. Let's use reason. What does mainstream science have to say about marijuana use? From the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of USA, quote, persistent cannabis users show neurophysiological decline from childhood to midlife. From Contemporary Pediatrics, marijuana use and adolescence do not mix. What about the campaign to legalize marijuana for medical use? It has proven effects of benefits on people with degenerative diseases.
I say it's a hoax.
Well, why is that a hoax? It is a hoax because we've had something called Marinol for quite a while, a legal pharmaceutical which can be prescribed, which is virtually the same thing as marijuana. It's a legalized use of marijuana, THC, without the harmful effects and addictive effects stripped out. We've had it for over a decade. The name is Marinol. The name is Marinol. We're not legalizing the medical use of marijuana. We're legalizing the medical use of harmful marijuana. Marinol, which is dronabinol, is an FDA-approved drug which has been marketed as a safe alternative to medicinal marijuana. Marinol is legal and has been proven to be an effective alternative to medical marijuana. There are many legal drugs that can be prescribed to relieve nausea, vomiting, and to help stimulate the appetite. The source of that is the American Cancer Society, November 2008. So friends, we don't need to legalize marijuana. All the good that can be gotten from it can be gotten from Marinol, and that is available. It's available with a prescription. So what is all the fuss about? Well, it's apparent that it's a hoax. You may wonder why I'm addressing the adolescent and teenager. When the proposals for legalizing marijuana do not advocate legalizing it for people under a certain age, or usually the age of majority. However, legalization for adults would make it much more available for youth and set an example, and making marijuana use one of the rewards for achieving maturity. And do you really think that the outlaw marijuana providers are going to go out of business, or are they just going to target the youth, their only remaining customers? Teenagers' rapidly developing brains put them at high risk from harm from marijuana use. A review of the drug's adverse effect emphasizes. Scientists at the National Institute on Drug Abuse, who wrote this review, note that active brain development during adolescence leaves the brain especially vulnerable to exposure to environmental chemicals, such as tetrahydrocannabinol, the active ingredient of marijuana. This may help explain why teenagers are particularly prone to suffer adverse effects from regular and early use of marijuana. The effects include greater potential for addiction than adults, impaired critical thinking and memory that persists for days after use, poor school performance, increased risk of dropping out, and lower achievement in later life. Teenagers who use marijuana are 2 to 4 times more likely as adults to develop symptoms of dependence within 2 years of starting the drug. A long-term study in 2002 showed that regular marijuana use in early adolescence led to neuropsychological decline, including lowered IQ and cognitive impairment. The effects persisted into adulthood, and quitting the drug did not fully reverse them. Adults who smoke marijuana regularly as teenagers have fewer neural connections in important areas of the brain that involve functions such as learning and memory, executive functions, including control of inhibitions and processing of habits and routines. Did you notice the bit, including control of inhibitions? A lot of the push to bring in marijuana is, of course, related to the sexual revolution, but it's also related to increased amount number of house burglaries. There's a high incidence of house burglars who are arrested while in the act, being high on marijuana, being stoned on marijuana. Very high incidence. Well, the agency supported 2013 Monitoring the Future survey found that 6.5% of high school seniors report using marijuana daily or almost every day. 60% are not aware of the drug's adverse effects. This gives pediatricians an important role to play in educating families and in educating teenagers about the harm of marijuana. One person reports this, that he smoked pot for 30 years and switched to vaporizing and high-grade medical marijuana. He got so addicted to it, he was spending upwards of $300 a month at the collective. It no longer got him high, and it turned into a bitter habit. Finally, he kicked the habit, and the withdrawal was a nightmare. So bad he never wanted to smoke pot again. Sure, this little plant is harmless. Try kicking the habit for 30 days. Then get back to us. It's addictive. It makes being bored and useless okay.
Now, before I get a lot of comments on this about people with 4.7 GPAs and marijuana being much safer than alcohol,
let's continue that point if the person can moderate the habit. Of course, we don't know what those people might have been like had they not smoked marijuana. They still might be to have been reduced from what they could have been. The truth about this user reported was that it robs your life, it robs your dreams, literally, and it's not harmless. It does real damage to developing brains and shaves IQ points and memory. And after 10 years of use, it's a really bad habit. There are three species. Cannabis is the genus. The three species are Cannabis sativa, Cannabis indica, and Cannabis ruderalis. They're originally from Central and South Asia. Now, cannabis has long been used for hemp, for fiber, for seed and seed oils, for medicinal purpose, and as a recreational drug. Industrial hemp products are made from cannabis plants, selected to produce an abundance of fiber. But what's happening now is, according to the UN Narcotics Convention, is cannabis strains are being selectively bred to produce high levels of THC. That's the intoxicating substance, THC. And now genetically modified cannabis is becoming available.
Of course, the libertarian argument is, what I do with my body is nobody else's business. But that fails to understand something we understand as Catholics, that we're a network. We are all an organic part of each other, all functioning in a cooperative environment, the body of Christ. And we depend on each other to be the best possible version of ourselves. And have these libertarians ever possibly considered that they may harm other people when their inhibitions against immoral activities against our fellow man has been reduced, and where their sense of space and coordination has been reduced? Have they ever thought about that? The rest of us depend on them, not to harm us. Think about the risk of motor vehicle accidents. Both immediate exposure and long-term exposure to marijuana impair driving ability. Marijuana is the illicit drug most frequently reported in connection with impaired driving and accidents, including fatal accidents. In an accident culpability analysis, persons testing positive for THC, typical minimum level of detection, and particularly those with higher blood levels, were 3 to 7 times as likely to be responsible for a motor vehicle accident as persons who had not used drugs or alcohol before driving. It has been definitely studied and documented that there is impaired motor coordination when using cannabis, and it interferes dramatically with driving skills. It increases the risk of injuries. It alters judgment, and it also alters spatial perception to a degree that alcohol does not. The question becomes, does government have a right to limit activities in which people may cause damage to themselves? You can debate that. But when the activity has been extensively documented to cause harm to other people, the government does seem to have a role in limiting that. To save childlike people from one another, do we need a kind of shepherd? We'll break down.
Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media.
You're listening to BreadboxMedia.com. The program is Setting the Record Straight, and I'm your host, Chuck Coughlin. This is Chuck Coughlin. I'm back with you after the break. I want to tell you about some of my personal opinions derived from my personal experiences. I worked for over 30 years as a professional in various criminal justice agencies. I wasn't front line. I was in the supportive role. Information systems and the criminal justice system, in every aspect of the criminal justice system, judges, court administration, prosecution, probation and parole, prisons, law enforcement. I worked in all these agencies in constant contact with the professionals. What the long-term law enforcement officers all observed in serious accidents were primarily caused by people who were intoxicated on both alcohol and marijuana at the same time. These were recorded as accidents caused by alcohol. The statistic did not exist, although the incident was there, that marijuana had been a factor. They just wrote up the alcohol. You could get a conviction on that kind of prosecution. Much more difficult to get with the marijuana, because it requires a blood test, which is usually voluntary. So the statistics are inaccurate. They weren't collected for the purpose of revealing the connection with marijuana use in traffic accidents. They were collected for the purpose of getting a prosecution. So what I am suggesting, and it is merely my personal suggestion, is that the incidence of marijuana's effect in causing traffic accidents has been depressed in statistics that are being used repeatedly everywhere to justify the legalization. In this one person's opinion, we do not have valid statistics. But the general sense from years of experience of many officers is that the use of marijuana is very significant in increasing the incidence of traffic accidents. We're going to hear from William Bennett. Now, Bill Bennett is an American conservative political theorist. And under President Reagan, he was Secretary of Education. Under George H.W. Bush, he was Director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. In other words, he was the drug czar. And he co-founded K-12, a publicly traded online education company, after that. And he's a frequent author and appears on TV frequently as a pundit, political pundit. And he's written a book called Going to Pot, and want him to comment on that. Here's what he has to say.
The book is about why we shouldn't legalize marijuana. And we wrote it because we saw this train coming down the track, legalization. As we speak, Alaska has just legalized general recreational use. And public opinion has shifted very much in that direction, and pretty dramatically. Maybe even more dramatically than gay marriage, this shift in public opinion to the favorable side. And, you know, 15, 20 years ago, maybe 20% of the American people were in favor of legalization. Now something like 60%. And given the evidence, we thought it important to write this book, and no one else seemed to be writing it, and I don't think anyone has, about why this is a bad idea. The other thing is, and this is very relevant, is as public opinion has softened on marijuana, maybe 60% of people in favor of legalization, the scientific evidence is overwhelming against it. I was drug czar, director of National Drug Control Policy, 89-90. We didn't have this kind of research then. We had some smattering. But now it is overwhelming, the harm that marijuana does. And I just have to believe, I want to believe, American people are not informed of these facts. And so the point of the book was to get these facts out so they can make a second judgment on this, informed decision. Let me get to the end of my story. I think in Colorado, which has been kind of ground zero here, that they will reconsider at the end of the day and try to put this genie back in the bottle and recriminalize, because they're starting to see the results of all this.
Now, Bill Bennett had a co-author. His co-author on this book is Robert A. White, who was a former assistant U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey, and now is the managing partner of a large international law firm. We're going to play some more audio. First, you'll hear Robert White discuss the background of their book and some of the worrisome facts that went into motivating them to write it. And then we'll hear Bill Bennett after that again.
Make no mistake, marijuana is dangerous. It affects the pleasure centers of the brain. It suppresses the natural production of dopamine. Unlike alcohol, which passes through the system in a relatively short period of time, marijuana can stay in the brain for long periods of time, indeed, in some instances, for more than a week. It's particularly damaging to the adolescent brain. The brain develops through our mid-20s. The use of marijuana during this formative period causes changes in the normal and natural development of the brain, and has been led in several studies to show that on average, someone will lose 8 IQ points, which is a permanent damage never to be returned. It's a vicious cycle. The more one uses marijuana, the more the brain demands it in ever-increasing potency, to the exclusion of other natural sources of pleasure, such as friendship, entertainment, sports, food, and even sex. There's a pot paradox. Just as we're spending more money on preschool programs, school lunch programs, providing enhanced helmets for students to use during sports, as we're spending more and more to protect and nurture our children, we are at the same time legalizing a substance that is irrefutably demonstrated to harm the developing mind. Marijuana use has other negative effects. It's been demonstrated that it increased the risk of mental illness, between 2 and 5 times increase in the risk of developing psychosis, schizophrenia, anxiety, and depression. A study at a Northwestern university indicates that individuals that have a family history of schizophrenia face a far greater risk of developing it if they smoke marijuana. But it's not limited just to the brain. Marijuana harms the lungs. There are 33 cancer-causing chemicals in marijuana. And for equal amounts of tobacco versus marijuana that are smoked, 4 times as much tar is deposited into the lungs with marijuana. This is because it's unfiltered, it's inhaled more deeply, and held longer in the lungs. But another interesting paradox, just as we spend billions to discourage smoking tobacco, we're legalizing a product to be smoked that provides even more damage. Marijuana contains 50 to 70% more carcinogenic hydrocarbons than does tobacco smoke. Marijuana smoking also impacts the heart. The heart rate increases 20 to 100% and can last up to 3 hours when smoked. And studies have found that users have a 4.8-fold increase in the risk of heart attack in the first hour after smoking marijuana. In addition, there is documentary evidence that it increases risk of cardiovascular problems. What we have seen over the last several years is a change in our cultural message. Where once we said marijuana was dangerous, smoking marijuana stigmatized one. Today, we're telling our youth not only that it's safe, but it actually may be medicinal. We have quoted in the book a presentation made by the then director of Normal in 1996 when California was considering legalizing medical marijuana. At a rally, he says, and you can see this, by the way, on YouTube, he says, first, we'll get medical marijuana. And then when we have hundreds of thousands of people smoking it, we'll go to the next step and get full legalization. It was a well-thought-out game plan, and it's working pretty well. Medical marijuana has been an effective strategy to advance the legalization agenda. However, Bill and I are acutely aware that there are people with afflictions which cause great suffering and who've not found relief from available medications or therapies, but who might find some relief using marijuana. We set forth in the book a 10-point compassionate prescription marijuana program to provide potential relief to those individuals, but which will prevent the widespread abuse which is currently present in most state medical marijuana programs. We have in this country a robust regulatory system for the approval of medicines. The FDA has technical standards and scientific evidence which they use to ensure that any medications Americans use are both safe and effective. Defining medicine through legislative fiat or referendum is not medicine. Pot's not medicine. No doctor can give you a prescription for marijuana. Calling it medical doesn't make it so. You can't find marijuana, medical marijuana, in any pharmacy. You can only find it in dispensaries or in someone's backyard. Unlike medicine, marijuana has no defined potency, purity, or strength. It's left to the growers, the users, and the dispensaries to determine the potency of the marijuana they sell. And indeed, we know that most of the dispensaries in Colorado, at least, they advertise and push the enhanced and ever-increasing higher levels of THC in the products they sell to obtain a competitive advantage. Or this is a marijuana advertisement from Colorado. You can see that the least powerful, least potent marijuana product being sold has 20% THC. The highest is 27% in this slide. If you go to Colorado, you can find 30 and 35% THC content in the marijuana that's being sold.
This is Chuck Coughlin. We're going to break now.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
You're listening to breadboxmedia.com. The program is Setting the Record Straight, and I'm your host, Chuck Coughlin. As to the question, should we legalize marijuana, we will now hear from William Bennett.
Come back to the bottom line. Supposing you are a preacher, a priest, a rabbi, a minister, or a legislator, or a teacher, a coach, or a more inclusive category, a parent, okay, a parent, and you want to find out about marijuana. So you go to the most prestigious journal in the world in medicine, the New England Journal of Medicine, where in a June 2014 article, all the literature and all the research was reviewed. Here's the summary. Adverse effects of short-term use and long-term or heavy use of marijuana. Let's say you're the parent of someone 16 years old. Short-term use effects. Impaired short-term memory, making it difficult to learn and to retain information. Impaired motor coordination, interfering with driving skills and increasing the risk of injuries. Altered judgment, increasing the risk of sexual behaviors that facilitate the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases. In high doses, paranoia and psychosis. Effects of long-term or heavy use. Addiction. In all users, about 9%. For those who begin marijuana in adolescence, 17%. 25 to 50% for those who are daily users. Also, altered brain development, poor educational outcome, increased likelihood of dropping out of school, cognitive impairment with lower IQ among those who are frequent users during adolescence, diminished life satisfaction and achievement, determined on the basis of subjective and objective measures as compared with such ratings in the general population. Good idea? Doesn't seem so. Indeed, the authors say early and regular marijuana use predicts an increased risk of marijuana addiction, which in turn predicts an increased risk of the use of other illicit drugs. There's a canard out there about gateway, how it's not a gateway drug. That's right in this sense. Most people who smoke marijuana do not go on to other drugs. But people who use other drugs, regarded sometimes as more serious drugs, almost all start with marijuana. Young people in treatment in the United States for drugs, 70% are there for marijuana. Final point, Bob has made it already. The negative effect of marijuana use on the functional connectivity of the brain is particularly prominent if use starts in adolescence or young adulthood. And that's where, of course, people want to hook people early on to establish that habit. which may help to explain the findings between frequent use of marijuana from adolescence into adulthood and significant declines in IQ. 8 IQ points. Who can afford to lose 8 IQ points? There's plenty more, but let's have some comments and some questions.
Thank you both. Thank you. Let me start it off. One of the things I liked about this particular book is you mentioned the scientific studies. You go into the various arguments why it's a bad idea to use. You put out the other side's arguments there and sort of knock it down with hard facts. But there's a softer side to this book. There are the emails and letters that you've gotten over the years, which tell the personal story that listeners. So any from your book to sort of stand out, or you just want to talk generally about why you decided to include that in your book?
Well, there are a couple, some interesting ones. There's a there are several that point out people who grew up with marijuana in the home, smoking with parents, and although they might have escaped it, siblings didn't. Mm-hmm. This it turns out to be pretty contagious in that sense. Then there's an odd story of a couple in their 60s who are going to a concert in Colorado and decide to toke up for the first time with new marijuana. They had done it in the 60s and 70s, and they each had a couple of puffs and could not get out of the car. This is reminiscent of Maureen Dowd's famous, now somewhat disavowed, column in the New York Times, in which she talked about her usual stay in a hotel. This was in Denver, where she said she'd, you know, load up on Chardonnay in a movie to relax. This time she bought one of the candy bars of the sort Bob was describing. And she took several bites of it and said that she then curled up in a ball and thought she had died. Mm-hmm. Again, this nostalgia about the 60s and 70s marijuana, this is not the marijuana of today. I think the other one, the one that I think I just so attached to, is this essay in the Atlantic magazine by a woman named Leah, who talks about her father, who didn't die from it, didn't become psychotic, didn't become paranoid, didn't become violent. But she said, I just remember so many times he forgot to pick us up, how many flat tires we had from running into curbs, how many forgetful things occurred, and wondering whether Dad would show up or not and what kind of shape he'd be in. This kind of misdirection. You know, I'll end with a quote. You ended with Hickenlooper. I'll end with Jerry Brown. Not someone I quote often, the governor of California, who said, you know, when they asked him about it, he said, you know, we got some big challenges in the United States, and we got even bigger ones in California. I'm not sure we're going to meet them unless we're focused, and I don't know how we're going to meet them focused if a third or a quarter of the population is going to be buzzed half the time. That's a pretty good thing. You got to be able to see things like unemployment and ISIS and educational outcomes clearly and in a focused way.
I've given you a rather extended excerpt of the conference of Bill Bennett and his co-author Robert White about their book, Going to Pot, How the Rush to Legalize Marijuana is Harming America. I want to mention a few more things in the few minutes we have left. THC, which is the chemical, which is a significant factor in intoxication with marijuana, acts on specific molecular targets on brain cells called cannabinoid receptors. These receptors are ordinarily activated by chemicals similar to THC that occur naturally in the body, such as anandamide, and are part of the neural connections network called the cannabinoid system. So they're part of a neural communication network. This system plays an important part in normal brain development and function. The highest density of cannabinoid receptors is found in parts of the brain that influence pleasure, memory, thinking, concentration, sensory and time perception, and coordinated movement. Marijuana overactivates the endocannabinoid system, causing the high, so-called high, and other effects that user experience. These effects include altered perceptions and mood, impaired coordination, difficulty with thinking and problem solving, and disruptive learning and memory. I want to also comment from a personal perspective that I was a professional musician for 25 years playing piano. And my experience in playing with other musicians who felt that their performance was enhanced by smoking marijuana was this, that not their actual performance, but their evaluation of their performance was elevated. This phenomenon was consistent across individuals, an exaggerated opinion of their own performance, which indeed was less than their usual sober standard. After a time, I began to suspect that it causes you to overestimate one's own performance. This is not the case with alcohol intoxication. In fact, at the time that they thought they were performing better, I was observing they were playing slovenly and without their usual inspiration. Another fact, marijuana smoke is an irritant to the lungs, and marijuana smokers can have many of the same respiratory problems experienced by tobacco smokers, such as daily cough, phlegm production, an acute chest illness, and a heightened risk of a lung infection. One study found, this is interesting, that people who smoke marijuana frequently but do not smoke tobacco have more health problems and miss more days of work than those who don't smoke marijuana. The reason for this missed work is mainly because of respiratory problems. It is not known yet whether marijuana smoking contributes to the risk for lung cancer, but it's not a far-fetched assumption. A number of studies have linked chronic marijuana use and mental illness. High doses of marijuana can produce a temporary psychotic reaction involving hallucinations and paranoia in some users. A use of marijuana can worsen the course of illness in patients with schizophrenia. A series of large studies following users across time also showed a link between marijuana use and later development of psychosis. Associations have also been found between marijuana use and other mental health problems, such as depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, especially among adolescents, and personality disturbances, including a lack of motivation to engage in typically rewarding activities. Marijuana use during pregnancy. Marijuana use during pregnancy is associated with an increased risk of neurobehavioral problems in babies because the THC and other compounds in marijuana mimic the body's own endocannabinoid chemicals. Marijuana used by pregnant mothers may alter the developing endocannabinoid system in the brain of the fetus. Consequences for the child may include problems with attention, memories, and problem solving. Because it seriously impairs judgment and motor coordination, marijuana contributes to the risk of injury or death when driving a car. A recent study indicated that marijuana use more than doubles a driver's risk of being in an accident. The combination of marijuana and alcohol is worse than either substance alone with respect to driving impairment. And this last factor has not been studied very adequately. So, hoping to bring a little light to a subject in which there's been great darkness and superstition, this has been Setting the Record Straight with Chuck Coughlin. Hoping to help a culture who is seeking the guidance of a kindly shepherd.